He's not quite an Aquaman or an Aqua Boy. He's Aqua Lad. And it's time for his geek history lesson to be in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason Waterfall Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson, and welcome to Your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character construct or aquamarine character from pop culture and teach you everything you need to know about it in about an hour. And today, Jason, we are talking about a very special lad, are we not?
That's right, because if you don't know, if you're not reading the DC Rebirth comics, Blood of the Manta is currently happening in the Teen Titans DC Rebirth series. So we thought it would be a perfect time to talk about Aqualad. This, of course, is the Aqualad that is Calderam, Jackson Hyde version, not the Garth version of Aqualad. So that would be a completely different lesson. We'd probably call that lesson Tempest, I think, if we did.
Ooh, if you would like to request that, I would love to teach that one.
Yeah.
Just putting that out there.
And you want to stick around till the very end of the show, because we are going to have an interview with Teen Titans writer Benjamin Percy.
What? Get That's out of right. town.
Yep, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about a lot of aqua stuff with him. But before we get to that, let's go into the 10-cent origin.
Which is, of course, the first part of the podcast where we tell you all the basic constructs, creators, and power sets that you need to know in case you go to a really cool Teen Titans party and someone's like, who is Aqualad?
He, of course, was a DC Comics character. His first appearance was actually in Young Justice.
Say what?
In an episode called Independence Day. His first comic appearance was in Brightest Day number 4 of August of 2010.
Oh, he's a baby.
Yep. He was created by Greg Wiseman, Brandon Vitti, and Phil Barassa. His real name is Calderam. His species is, he is an Atlantean slash human hybrid. His place of origin is Atlantis. His team affiliations have been Teen Titans slash Young Justice. And his notable aliases have been Jackson Hyde, Waterboy, and Calder.
Waterboy, that's too bad.
His abilities are superhuman strength. He is adapted to underwater environments. He can swim at superhuman speed levels. He has hydrokinesis. That means he can move the water with his mind, y'all. He has bioelectric energy blasts, and he has hydro swords that can shift into a shield and various weapons, which is sort of a form of his hydrokinesis. So there you go. There's a lot of interesting things to learn about Calder. But now let's talk about this. I want to talk about Blue Apron for a little bit, not just because they amazingly sponsored the episode that you are listening to right now, but because I actually use Blue Apron, and I think they're amazing. They allow you to make some affordable food that tastes fantastic. Some of these food items that I've made through Blue Apron, I cannot believe the taste of them. Some of the stuff that I recently made was the barbecue chicken sliders and the seared chicken and pasta salad, and the flavors and the taste and just how easy it was to cook, because each meal they give you comes with a step-by-step guide, making a fool like me look like a culinary genius, because I was able to make this food in 40 minutes or less. And it's so amazing because this food comes right to your door. I love Blue Apron, and it's kind of my thing to convince people to use Blue Apron. So please go check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/lesson. That's LESSON. I swear you are going to love Blue Apron, how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, because there is such an amazing variety of new recipes each week. Impress your loved ones with great food, everybody. So go to blueapron.com/lesson. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook. Now let's go to the meat cute for Calderam Aqualad. Ashley, where did you first encounter? I mean, the answer I think might be pretty obvious on this one.
I think it probably is.
But where did you first encounter Calderam?
So, unexpectedly, I first encountered Calderam when he made his premiere in Young Justice. And I really liked him right off the bat for two reasons. One, because he sounded exactly like Cyborg from the original Teen Titans cartoon.
Same voice.
It is. It's
Kari Payton.
Kari Payton, yeah. And is it Kari or Kari?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, Mr. Payton, we love you. We'd love love you to come on the show anytime. And I really like him as an actor. I like him as a voice actor a lot. So that was a plus for me. I'd also just finished a big rewatch of Avatar: The Last Airbender. And he reminded me of a waterbender. And he kind of reminded me of Sokka, even though he's much more serious.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in on both counts. I really do like Garth, the original Aqualad.
Tempest.
Yeah, who's currently, yes, Tempest.
I like him better as Tempest.
Well, I mean, he was after my own heart in the original, Teen Titans. But I think that Calder is a better character,
yes.
A more interesting character. Garth.
Garth is, it's funny, the original Teen Titans, I feel, are all better as their second iterations. Like,
I agree.
Dick Grayson is better as Nightwing. Donna Troy is better as, I would say, Troya.
Mm-hmm.
Wally West is better as The Flash.
He's the best Flash.
Garth is better as Tempest.
Yeah, you're right. That's very interesting.
Speedy is better as Arsenal.
I love the name Speedy, though.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be a fun discussion episode
someday.
So I was always really into Calder, and I really like the way he's been adapted into the current comics. Mm-hmm. I think Mr. Percy's done an excellent job. So how about you? What is your...
It was the same as Young Justice.
You know,
Young Justice is one of those shows that I didn't watch right when it came out. I think when season two premiered is when I went back, when I finally saw season one, because I'd heard about it. But also, like, I remember the time, it was one of the few times in my life that I've actually had cable. Yes, I hardly ever buy cable. Pull your jaw up from the floor. I'm a cord cutter.
Those damn millennials.
Yep. Damn, take it away, cable.
Sorry to all of our Southern listeners.
But it was one of the times that I actually did have cable, and mm-hmm. I remember I didn't watch it originally because it was just Cartoon Network always scheduled it at weird times.
Yeah, Cartoon Network seems to have a weird relationship with the DC cartoons.
Yeah, so I could never keep up with it is what would happen, basically. But, you know, Calder was okay. He was never my favorite because I'm never a fan of the logical kind of Spock character, which is exactly who he was.
Get out of town, Spock's
yeah.
the best.
And then even though like he fought Robin a little bit for the leadership in the very first couple episodes, I still was like, no, Dick Grayson Robin's better, man. Come on.
Well, and if you're familiar with the Teen Titans, there's no way it's not going to be a Robin, but especially Dick Grayson Robin.
Yeah. All right, let's move into the History 101.
The main meat of the lesson where Professor Jason is going to break down everything you need to know about Calderon. Let's jump right in.
All right, now first we're going to get into a little bit of production history because Calderon is one of these few characters that was actually created outside of the comic books like Harley Quinn and then brought into the comic books because everybody loved him. Calderon was developed specifically for the Young Justice Cartoon Network show rather than the existing Aqualad, Garth. Mm. Now, there were several reasons for this. In the comic books, Garth had stopped using his name Aqualad and been going by Tempest, as we said. And furthermore, Garth had actually been killed off during the event Blackest Night, so the character was not actually in current DC Comics continuity.
I was going to say, I was pretty sure he was dead at the time.
Yeah, yeah. So a new character was created so that they could add more diversity to the cast, and Calderon was therefore created and inspired by characters such as Cal Durham, who is a former henchman of Black Manta in the comic books, who betrays him.
I didn't know that. I also want to get up on the soapbox for a minute and say, look, diversity can actually bring about some really amazing characters.
He's also partly inspired by the DC comic book series Arian.
Mm-hmm.
Arian's about this like Atlantean warlock. I don't know if you, and in that series, it was revealed that not all Atlanteans are Caucasian.
Which was really cool.
Yeah. Now, during the production of the series Young Justice, Geoff Johns saw the designs for Calderon and decided that it was so cool that he wanted to transfer the character into the mainstream DC universe as the new Aqualad. Johns' Aqualad, though, has a slightly different background than Calderon. Instead of being raised in Atlantis, he's raised in New Mexico, and he has the name of Jackson Hyde. He also lacks Calder's obvious Atlantean physical traits, but he retains Calder's tattoos and other stuff.
And his blonde hair.
Yeah, yeah. Now, fun fact, Jackson Hyde first appears in Brightest Day number 4, which actually hit newsstands before the pilot movie of Young Justice. It beat Young Justice by 5 months.
You're blowing my mind. I had no idea.
Yeah. But it just goes to show you that's how cartoon production works.
Well, animation takes a minute. Yeah,
it takes a long time. So yeah, yeah. So Geoff Johns saw them animating the episodes, liked him so much, and was able to get Aqualad into the comic books before Young Justice.
That's really cool, yep. Actually.
Also, Aqualad's physicality is based on American Olympian swimmer Michael Phelps, and his costume combined the aspects of Aqualad in the comic books as well as the full body suits used by American swimmers in the 2004 Athens Olympics and the 2008 Beijing Olympics.
Oh, that's so interesting, because I'm going to do a weird sidebar here. Michael Phelps is known for having extraordinarily long arms compared to a lot of other swimmers. So I wonder, I never considered that before about Calder. That's so interesting.
All right. Now, first, we're going to talk about his Young Justice backstory first, since that technically came first, even though the comic book beat it. And I'm not going to give you a breakdown of the entire show. I'm just going to give you a breakdown of like important Calder events.
Mm-hmm. Okay? And definitely go watch the show if you haven't.
It's all on Netflix.
Yes.
So Aqualad came from the Atlantean city of Shearis, where he was raised by Shalana. Now, I may have mispronounced both of those. I could not find the episode where they mentioned both of those names, so I have not heard them said out loud since the last time I watched Young Justice. Chill out with your comments. Yeah. All right, there we go. So he was raised by Shalana, and Calvin Durham, a henchman of Black Manta, who was genetically altered to infiltrate Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
However, his actual father was Black Manta himself, and Calder completed his education and began mandatory military service at age 12. At 14, he was transferred to the Conservatory of Sorcery in Poseidonis, which is one of the Atlantean cities.
Mm-hmm.
One day, the villain Ocean Master, do you know who Ocean Master is, Ashley?
Only very vaguely. I've not read a ton of Aquaman.
He is Arthur Curry's half-brother, who believes that he deserves the throne.
Cool.
So, very Games of Thronesy there, right there, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So the villain Ocean Master attacked Atlantis, causing Aquaman to battle with him. During the fight, Aquaman was defeated, but was suddenly helped by the combined forces of Calderam and Garth. Using a combination of Garth's magic and Calder's fighting abilities, the two attacked Ocean Master. Though they were easily defeated, this allowed Aquaman precious time to recover and defeat Ocean Master. After the victory, Aquaman offered the boys the opportunities to become his protégés, and Garth said no and returned to his studies to become a better underwater wizard. And Calder jumped at the chance to serve the King of Atlantis, and he became a superhero 2 years before we saw him, you know, in the first episode of Young Justice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He actually has a very impressive knowledge of various villains and other things and other battles that he's encountered when you meet him in the first episode of Young Justice, because he mentions Guardian, he knows who Sportsmaster is, he knows who the Cult of Cobra is, and he's heard of Professor Ivo before.
Yes.
So Aqualad, as we meet him in the first episode, eagerly expected to become a member of Justice League alongside Speedy, Robin, and Kid Flash. However, when this wasn't happening, you know, Justice League stiffed them all, he decided to accompany Robin and Kid Flash to investigate Cadmus Labs. There they discovered the Genomorph Project and Superboy, who they both liberated.
In his white costume.
Yep. The four youths stood up to their mentors and declared that they were ready to prove themselves as heroes, and they formed a covert op team and was given their own headquarters in Mount Justice by Batman, and then were then introduced to Miss Martian. Now, that was the beginning, the hook, the inciting incident of the Young Justice series. Ashley, let me ask you, did you like the pilot episode of Young Justice when you first saw it?
I really liked the pilot. So I watched the entire first series, I won't say live to air because I didn't have cable, but I'll let you imagine how I acquired that from the internet.
Yeah, you damn kid, you're the gold gutters and keep away my cables.
So I was pretty in for most of the first season. I fell off about halfway through, and then I didn't watch the second season until I met you.
Oh, interesting.
But I thought
it's a good season.
It's a far superior season. There's really good stuff in season one, though. I would say that the hook of the first episode, that they're being stiffed by the Justice League, is a really good narrative device.
Mm.
And I think having Cadmus be their first foe is interesting as well. I think it falls apart sort of in the middle. But I like the first. I like the pilot a lot. Do you?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. Well, fine.
Okay, so the Young Justice team's first official mission was to investigate the stoppage of Venom production in Santa Prisca Prison. Of course, we all know why Santa Prisca Prison is important, right, Ashley?
Hey.
Brain.
If you're reading the current Batman series, you've seen a bit of it.
Yes. Now, while Robin initially took the lead, the team eventually agreed that Aqualad was their natural leader. Aqualad, with the rest of the Teen Titans, began taking training sessions with Black Canary, and the team was assigned to guard shipments of the disassembled Amazo. Professor Ivo was able to retrieve and reassemble the robot, but the team defeated Amazo and captured Ivo. Later, Batman ordered the team to do something with Clayface, and that is track him.
What?
Yep, through Gotham City, while Batman tried to figure out a way to defeat him. Still distracted by Tula, his lady, Aqualad allowed the team to engage Clayface against Batman's order, and the team was quickly handed their butts. They were soundly defeated.
Oh, yeah.
But they were saved by Batman at the last minute. Batman questioned Aqualad's commitment to surface life, and Aqualad returned to Atlantis to resolve his issues with Tula, and he was heartbroken to discover that she had begun a relationship with his best friend, Garth. And at the same time that he was there, Black Manta launched an attack on Atlantis, which called her help to repel. Aqualad then invited Superboy and Miss Martian to visit Atlantis with them, and they met Calder's parents. They went to the capital, where they helped to thwart Ocean Master's plot to steal Queen Mara's powers.
Sidebar, I really liked Tula and I wanted her to join Young Justice.
Oh, really?
That's yeah, cool. I did.
Eventually, at the end of season one, they found out that the mole in their team was Red Arrow, or Arsenal, and then they saved the Justice League from the Light and Vandal Savage. And then the show skips ahead 5 years for season two. Ashley, I think that was one of the best choices the show ever made. Do you agree to skip ahead 5 years?
I do. And when it was initially announced, obviously I didn't watch it till a couple years later. I was not super pleased with that because one of the greatest things about Teen Titans or Teen Titans adjacent teams like Young Justice
is that they're young,
is that you get to see them grow up. And skipping 5 years is pretty significant. But the 5-year jump allows some of my most favorite characters to be brought in.
Like Nightwing and Tim Drake.
And Bart Allen.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and Batgirl. And
I forgot about Batgirl.
And you get the relationship.
And Cassie Wonder Girl.
Oh, yeah, and Cassie. And you get the relationship between Superboy and Miss Martian really matures. Like, there's a lot of really good stuff that comes with the 5-year jump. So in hindsight, I super, super liked it. But at the time, I was like, this seems weird, and I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
As happens when you don't know the whole story sometimes.
Well, that's fine. So in season two, it's called Young Justice Invasion. It's set 5 years later. Calder is working undercover with Black Manta, his father. But you actually find out that he's working for Nightwing to find out who the Light's partner is. In the episode Depths, Black Manta sends Calder and the Manta Men, a great band name, to disrupt a satellite launch at Ferris Aircraft, where he and Nightwing fake Artemis's death to put her undercover as Tigress. In Darkest, Aqualad, Tigress, and a team of supervillains track Impulse and Blue Beetle to Mount Justice. They capture them, along with Beast Boy, and they destroy Mount Justice with a bomb. It is later revealed that he secretly gave Nightwing a tracking device that corresponds to a tracker that he injected with Lagoon Boy, one of the,
Oh, Lagoon Boy is super Lagoon, I think.
Lagoon? I don't know, whatever.
He's a really weird character.
Yeah, Atlantean. In Before Dawn, then Miss Martian confronted and mentally attacked Aqualad as revenge for a supposed killing of Artemis, but drops into a state of guilt when she learns about his and Artemis's undercover mission. Artemis arrives, shocked by what Miss Martian had done, escapes with a catatonic Aqualad. And Artemis manipulates Black Manta into capturing Miss Martian to repair Calder's mind. After Miss Martian succeeds, of course, repairing Aqualad's mind, Aqualad then pretends to remain catatonic to keep Black Manta from killing her and arrange for her to escape. Later, during a summit between the Light and the Reach Ambassador, because the Reach are the secret partners of the Light.
Reach Cola.
Yep. Artemis's and Aqualad's deception is revealed, and Miss Martian, disguised as Deathstroke, fakes their deaths. Aqualad subsequently revealed the Light's enduring betrayal of the Reach via a hologram, and he and Artemis and Miss Martian revealed their betrayal. During a substantial conflict between the Light, the Reach, and the gathered forces of the Young Justice team, which had infiltrated the Light's foot soldiers, Aqualad defeats his father, Black Manta, and is soon revealed and is soon after revealed he has been the one to defeat Deathstroke as well. He is made leader of the team again by Nightwing, who soon leaves in the wake of Wally West's death in the finale, during the defeat of the Reach in the season 2 finale. Now, that is where the show ends off. They, of course, are making a season 3 as we speak. We don't know much about it, but let's now go to the comics history of Aqualad. But before we do that, let's go to this. We all know that one of the most important things about running your business is that you need great talent, right? Even if you're doing a podcast, you need great talent. Or you're running a business, it's even more important. So with ZipRecruiter, they're going to help you post your job to 100 plus job sites with just one click, because they want to help you find the right people, the right talent, better than anyone else. Fun fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. That's an amazingly small amount of time, especially for finding the right person qualified for your jobs. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes, big and small, to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. That's ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/geekhistory. You got to find that talent for your jobs. Now, Ashley, we've dropped into the comic books. There's a different version of Calder. He's not really Calder.
Wait, what?
He's Jackson. All right. So a different version of the character debuted in Brightest Day number 4 in August of 2010, which coincided, again, like I said, a little bit ahead of the appearance of Aqualad in the Young Justice animated series. Mm-hmm. In the comic books, he is a teenager from Silver City, New Mexico. And Jackson Hyde was taught by his parents to fear water since he was young. They do not want him to go near it because his true parents would be able to locate him. And not to mention, there are certain changes that happen to Jackson when he gets near water. Now, Jackson has kept this secret hidden for years. He lies to his girlfriend about being afraid of drowning and being able to swim. He's like, I can't swim. And he's like, I don't know where these mysterious tattoos I have on my back came from, girl.
Yeah, and they're pretty extensive.
Yeah. Aquaman is later contacted by the Entity, which is the representation of the White Lantern, the representation of life in the DC Universe, who tells him to locate Jackson before a second unidentified group, which is speculated to be a death squad that is going to find him. Now, Jackson Hyde and his girlfriend Maria are drawn into the events of Brightest Day after witnessing Deadman, Hawk, and Dove activate the White Lantern battery, which had landed in Silver City, New Mexico, after the events of Blackest Night.
Oh, that's convenient.
Kawinky-dink, right? As the battery begins to speak to the heroes, the tattoos on Jackson's right arm begin to glow.
It's actually really cool. Like, visually, it's a kind of a cool moment.
Then Jackson is seen outside his house during a rainstorm where he displays his hydrokinesis abilities for the very first time. And as soon as he started to control water from the rain, his tattoos and his eyes began glowing. At this moment, he is revealed to possess gills and webbed hands, and it's revealed that Black Manta is actually his real father and that Mara has some sort of connection to him. Who's Mira?
Oh, Mira is Arthur's lady.
Yes, with red hair.
Yes, you've seen pictures of her from the Justice League set.
Yeah. After witnessing Jackson in the rain with all his crazy water powers.
That's the best description I've ever heard.
Damn kids taking away my cable and having all the crazy water powers. Come here,
you old man in New Mexico hates Jackson.
Silver City, New Mexico was a good old place until these hydrokinetic kids came in here and took all my cables. I think I'm going to get in the car and leave and go to come car.
not Gotham.
There won't be any no hydrokinetic kids in Tucum car, I can tell you that. I love New Mexico, by the way, so please, people of New Mexico, don't take offense to that.
We're just having a bit of fun.
We're just having fun. We've gotten those comments before, which I think is quite ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I actually do like New Mexico. So,
all right.
His father, his adoptive father, Jackson's adopted father, takes him to a cottage by the sea. He tells him that Mira had given Jackson to him, asking that he keep him away from his parents and that he was given an Atlantean chest to be opened when the truth about his heritage had been discovered. Before the chest can be opened, though, Black Manta, along with Siren and her death squad, attacks. And Jackson, using his ability to create hard water constructs, defends his adoptive father, but cannot stop Black Manta from shooting a trident-shaped dart at him. Jackson's adoptive father would have died if not for the last-second intervention of Aquaman, Arthur Curry.
Dun, dun, dun.
Who blocks and crushes the dart. Aquaman gets Jackson and his foster father to safety, where everything is explained to them. The chest is open, which activates a map. And using the map, the two discover a sealed chest that only Jackson can open. Once the chest is open, Jackson is shown a recording of Mira, who explains that his father and mother had been kidnapped and tortured by the people of Zebel, which is an extra-dimensional Atlantean penal colony, while exploring the Bermuda Triangle, where the gateway to the colony is located. Now, Zebel's king had ordered that the child, the first outsider born there in centuries, be experimented on in order to serve as the key that would finally free them from their extra-dimensional prison. Fearing that this child's safety, Mira stole the infant and brought him to the surface world, where she subsequently gave him to the foster family that ended up raising him. She also reveals his true name, Calderon. Once the recording is over, Jackson discovers several items that Mira had left for him, notably a soldier's uniform from Zebel and a pair of water bearers, metallic constructs that help him control his water manipulation abilities.
Oh yeah, those are cool.
Aquaman and Jackson ultimately end up in Miami, Florida, where Black Manta and Siren are leading an army of warriors from Zebel in a full-scale invasion. Jackson successfully uses his water bearers to create blades, which he uses to fight off the attacking troops, and kind of holds his own in a duel with Siren. After Black Manta severs Aquaman's right hand, Jackson, that's what, you know, Aquaman does a lot. He loses his hands.
He should only have one hand. He's way cooler without one.
I know. His second hand should be a harpoon hand.
Exactly.
That's the best Aquaman.
And long hair and a beard.
Yep, that's right. So Black Manta severs Aquaman's hand. Jackson attacks his father and berates him for siding with the people who killed his own wife, only for Black Manta to throw Jackson to the ground and coldly state that both Jackson and Jackson's mother meant nothing to him.
What a dick.
That's right.
Just so mean.
Just as Black Manta is about to impale his son with one of his blades, Mira arrives with Aqua Girl, who saves Jackson by kicking his father square in the face.
Yeah.
And after using his bioelectric abilities to cauterize Aquaman's wound, Jackson and Mira are able to work together to steal Black Manta, Siren, and the rest of the invaders away from the Bermuda Triangle. As the heroes celebrate, Jackson is shown to be harboring a crush on Aqua Girl, and afterwards, Mira tells Aquaman that Jackson wants to continue his training, and Aquaman informs her that he has already contacted the Titans.
Yeah.
And then the New 52 and DC Rebirth happens. Ashley, can you give a brief description of both of those events?
So the New 52, in 2011, DC was like, there's so much to do. So Flash runs back in time because he misses his mom, resets the world, everybody gets new costumes with too many lines on them, and has only been a superhero for about 5 years. Then at the end of that, DC Rebirth happens, where basically...
Well, it's not a reboot. I would say it's more like...
It's a soft reboot.
It's a soft reboot. I would say like all the characters get a refocusing.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of reveal that they're starting to remember their past histories.
Right. So it's a melding of the pre and post New 52 continuity that focuses more on character.
Exactly, and story. So in the DC Rebirth Teen Titans, written by Benjamin Percy, Jackson Hyde is introduced basically waterbending in his room. He reveals his fascination with the new Teen Titans after seeing a viral video. Mm-hmm. And then he shows his boyfriend Kenny his powers. And they're sitting on a pick-em-up truck, which I thought was a very cute scene.
This was like my favorite introduction to him ever.
Kenny freaks out and breaks up with Jackson. And this leads him to leaving New Mexico and showing up at the new Titans Tower on Alcatraz Island in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Goliath, Damian's giant man bat, who I love.
I love Goliath.
I really want DC to make you know how they're making a Super Sons 2-pack with Damian Jonathan Kent? I want them to make a Super Pets 2-pack, and it's Goliath, Crypto and Streaky.
Oh, I was going to say, because DC, I know you're listening. I really want a sizable stuffed Goliath.
Oh!
Like that you can like put over your shoulders. Oh, no, but I want him to be big. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, you can put his wings up.
Yeah, seriously, I would pay whatever you wanted.
For a Goliath.
For a Goliath.
Now, I know
please.
You're not a fan of Damien, so I find it so funny that you like Goliath.
I'm not a Damien person, but I love Goliath. And I like that because Goliath kind of won't stand for Damien's crap. So, like, sometimes when Damien...
Goliath's a smart dog, really.
He is. So, sometimes when Damien's being a jerk, Goliath will just, like, take him out of the situation. Or he'll just, like, flick him across the room. Like, I don't like, Goliath's got my back. So, I would like a giant Goliath backpack, please.
All right,
thank
get on that. All right. So, Goliath, I bring him up because this giant man bat accidentally lets Jackson into the tower.
I don't think it's an accident.
That's how Jackson gets inside Teen Titans Tower. And so, Jackson confronts the team. Of course, Damien is not too happy that he is there. He's like, how did you get in here? And Jackson's like, look, I'm looking for help with my powers. And Damien tells him to leave because he's like, I have pre-chosen my team. You're not part of this team.
Mm-hmm.
When the team later confronts King Shark, Jackson is able to save Damien from certain death. And Damien repays him by giving him a Hydro suit that Damien originally meant rebuilt as a Robin suit and tells him that he can stick around for now. And that's how Jackson has joined the current Teen Titans. Of course, there's a storyline where they fight Deathstroke after that, and then there's the current Black Manta storyline that's going on, but I don't want to get into that because the comic books are out right now, and I don't want to get too spoilery because we can save those spoilers for our conversation with Benjamin.
Heck yeah.
All right, so that is it for the history of Jackson Hyde. Let's move into recommended reading.
Where Professor Jason is going to recommend a bunch of stuff that you can read if you want to know more about Calder. He'll always be Calder to me because of Young Justice.
And don't forget where you can find these.
You can find them all on geekhistorylesson.com. You click on recommended reading. You click on the Amazon widget. You get yourself some homework, and a little bit comes back to support our ongoing efforts here at the Mind University.
That's right. First one is there's not very many. There's not much.
Well, he's a baby character, so it can be tough.
Brightest Day, Volume 1.
Heck yeah.
Of course, it's the introduction of Jackson Hyde Calder into the DC Universe for the very first time. It has some really great art. It's a fun little book that kind of explores all the DC Universe. Teen Titans, Volume 2, Rebirth trade is the introduction of who is Aqualad, mm-hmm. that storyline. Now, I'm giving you this. It doesn't come out till January 30th. But
go pre-order it.
Of 2018, you can go pre-order it. But also, you can find all the issues on Comixology in case you want to read it. They're worth reading. And then, of course, my last choice, of course, is Young Justice, the complete first season mm-hmm. on Blu-ray. Looks really great on Blu-ray, and it's a really fun show.
Which you should be watching anyway, because the new series is coming out soon.
That's right. You got to catch up on that. All right, now we're going to move into our discussion. And for our discussion, we wanted to pull in a Teen Titans Aqualad expert. Expert, not export. He could be an export.
Well, he exports the characters right to our homes.
He exports the expertise.
There you go.
I think. All right. So who better than the current writer of Teen Titans? He's also the current writer of Green Arrow, which is also excellent. So please welcome to the podcast, writer Benjamin Percy. Ben, thank you for joining us on Geek History Lesson.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
My first question to you is, what is it like to actually write the Teen Titans for DC Comics?
It feels like an incredible privilege that I'm the custodians of these storied characters. And I have to admit that as much fun as I'm having, I almost have the anticipation of getting kicked out the door after every issue because it doesn't feel like work. It feels like I'm getting away with something.
Nice. Now, you recently put Aqualad onto this team. What made you decide to put Aqualad in the book?
I knew from the very beginning that we would put Aqualad in the series. And when I say the beginning, I mean two Januaries ago, mm-hmm. when the discussions about Rebirth began. And that's when I flew out to Burbank and I went into that room with Jeff Johns. And basically, he wouldn't let me out of the room until we had figured everything out about Green Arrow, about Teen Titans. And there's that one wall in there that's all whiteboard, and there's that other wall that's all windows. And, you know, you can sort of watch the sun arc across the sky and sink towards the horizon as you talk and you talk and you talk. So I knew that Aqualad would be part of the series from the very beginning. I wanted to be part of the series from the very beginning, but we had to give him his due. He's such an interesting character that we didn't want to sort of crowd things up in the first arc. So that's why he didn't show up until issue 6 to really give him a platform a highlighted platform to really explore this character. And, you know, there's a number of reasons that sort of inform why he's in the series. One, just logistically, think about the fact that they're on this island in San Francisco Bay, and it makes sense to have an aquatic hero on their side. Also, the Teen Titans view themselves as tomorrow's Justice League. 70% of the world is water, so they better be able to defend above and below. And also, he just has such a rich history, and I find him such a fascinating character. I'd say that I'm most influenced by the Geoff Johns run. Mm-hmm. If you look at Jackson Hyde's representation and, The Brightest Day, Blackest Night, and if you look at the Young Justice TV series, animated series, I've been a real fan of that for a long time and how they represent Kaldur. So
Now one of my patrons over at patreon.com/Jawan, he wanted to ask you, Sean Craven, what do you think makes Aqualad a vital member of the team, both as a person and as a superhero?
Well, he fits right in with this gang of misfits, right? Because he has a troubled history. If you think about characters like Damian, or if you think about characters like Kid Flash, you know, they're struggling with their legacy. Damian has the blood of Ra's al Ghul running through him, but he's also a divided hero. He's, you know, the son of Batman. Here you have Kid Flash, who comes to understand that his father is Reverse Flash, and, you know, that haunts him. And you have Raven as well, who's, you know, struggling, with her demonic biology. And so, you know, a character like Aqualad, who is the son of Black Manta, like, he partners these conflicted characters so well. And especially if you think about the Teen Titans as, you know, they're characters who don't quite know who they are yet. They're in that in-between time. They're struggling to discover what their future might be, what kind of person they might be, what kind of hero they might be. So I love how embryonic he is. And I love, too, that he belongs to underrepresented groups, you know, that he is a Black hero. He is a gay hero. And it's important that everybody sees themselves represented in the heroes of the DCU. And as for just him being a superhero, you know, he's got lots of badass powers, and we haven't even revealed all of them all yet. So, you know, there might be some electric eel shock coming down the pipeline. You'll just have to wait and see.
I liked your point where you said that you're building the Teen Titans as sort of a team of broken kids. Was that also originally in your original pitch, that the idea that all these kids are having problems with their legacies?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's how I approached the series from the very beginning. That these are characters who are on the cusp of coming to understand who they might be as people and as heroes. And, you know, that's what makes them interesting to me, that they have found a family in each other, that they have found friendship, community in each other, where they might be ostracized or alienated otherwise, that their powers are, you know, not to get too X-Men-ish, but, you know, sort of freakish and alienating. And that's, you know, that's what every teen feels like. And this is just an exaggerated version of that. You know, when it comes to the more iconic characters like Superman and Wonder Woman, like, they're obviously fantastic to read about. But I love the fissures that you find in characters like the Teen Titans, you know, the weaknesses, the vulnerabilities. It just makes them so much more three-dimensional, so much more relatable.
Now, Ben, at the time of this podcast, the second part of Blood of the Manta will be dropping. Can you tell us a little bit about that storyline in case any of our listeners haven't been catching up?
Yeah, we're going to be diving into the secret lives of Aqualad's parents. So we're going to be delving into Black Manta's history, his connection to Lucia Hyde, and how they came together, how Jackson Hyde was conceived. You know, we're going to get some Zebellian intrigue, some of the treasure hunting history that informs Aqualad's origins. And, you know, I can't give away too much, but let's just say that there is an artifact from the past that is bound together with the necklace, the shell necklace that Jackson wears. And, you know, an adventure is about to swing into view that I think a lot of people will find surprising. And it's an adventure that, you know, will be told partially here, but it opens up so many possibilities for the future of this character.
The way you describe it, it kind of sounds like it might be Jackson Hyde's year zero.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I did with Roy Harper in Green Arrow. And that's the way I'm approaching Jackson in this, is that, you know, obviously there are all these origin stories for DC characters, but, and sometimes people, when they're reading Rebirth, they're sort of like struggling with how this fits together. Like, okay, I have this version of the character in my head. How does it align with what's going on in Rebirth? And we're sort of taking, I don't want to speak for all the different creators, but we're sort of taking the best of, you know, the best of hits from the past, and then uniting them with their own vision so that, this is, in my mind, and I hope, you know, readers are digging what I'm doing, but this is, in my mind, like the best possible version of Aqualad. And I'm drawing from, you know, the DC animated universe as well as the comics when I say that.
How much does Young Justice inform your writing of Jackson? I am very curious about that, because you talked about making this the nice melting pot of Aqualad. But again, as you brought up, yeah, Young Justice nailed an amazing version of this character. And does that kind of loom over you, or are you just like, no, I'm going to use the best pieces of that?
It looms over me in a way, because it's, you know, a high standard and I want to live up to that. But, you know, the Jackson that you see in the version of Aqualad that you see in Young Justice is a lot farther ahead, you know, in his journey than this version of Jackson. So we're sort of going back in time more so. And he, you know, there are some differences, but he has so much to discover about himself and so much to discover about his powers in the meantime before he sort of catches up with that Young Justice version of himself.
Now, what member of the Teen Titans does Jackson like the most? And which one does he dislike the most? I figure, as the writer of Teen Titans, you're the one that could answer this question the best.
You know, I think that the person that he likes the most, maybe despises the most, might be the same one. In that Damian has taken a real interest in Jackson. Mm-hmm. And part of that is subtextual, right? Damian feels as though, he would never admit this to himself, but Damian feels as though he has failed the team, like that he hasn't stepped up as a leader. And Kid Flash is the main reason for that. You know, the Kid Flash being swept up into the time stream, Kid Flash being, you know, sort of corralled by Deathstroke and recruited by Deathstroke. So he is taking out a lot of his frustration on Jackson and trying to make him into the best possible recruit for this team. So Jackson both resents this and, you know, is very grateful for it, because he came to the Teen Titans sort of like as a walk-on on a varsity team. He's like, you know, I want to be part of this. So there's that complication that is going to be further complicated by, I feel like I'm being maybe a little too spoilery here, but you can probably anticipate that there's a power shift coming, right? Okay. You've got Damian taking over the Teen Titans and not doing the best job of it. His relationship with Starfire is a little bit, it's not an exact parallel, but it's a little bit like Wolverine and Jean Grey in the X-Men. And Starfire is, you know, not only the most experienced, not only the oldest member of the team, but she's also, the warmest. And would make a much better leader than Damian. So there's going to be a kind of, let's say, coup awaiting the future of the Teen Titans. And Starfire is really going to be there for Jackson.
Oh, I look forward to reading that. Yeah, it is there if you're looking for it, but especially the idea that Damian is the youngest member of this team, and he probably shouldn't be leading this team, in all honesty.
No, he's a fascinating character. I love Damian. But, you know, it's all – everybody loves to hate Damien as well. You know, he's a really troubled guy. And he has he's a hero, but he also has these villainous notes to him. And yes, he is incredibly inexperienced. He's also totally out of touch with his emotions. And that's why he's been so fascinating to have in this mix. And, you know, I'm telling a long story here. I'm telling a kind of novelistic story where you have Damien cementing the team, saving everybody's lives. And they're grateful to him for that, but they're also resentful because he's so bullying, so tyrannical in his approach. So there has to be a kind of negotiation. There has to be a kind of peace summit that awaits them in the future where the dynamics of the team will shift. And, you know, that's the fun thing about writing a series over many issues is that, you know, the status quo, if you're doing it right, the status quo is always shifting.
Now, going back to Aqua a little bit, is there a hero in the DC universe that you think would be an awesome team up for Jackson in the DC universe?
Well, you'll see in the next few issues that, you know, we're building off of a thread in the Lazarus contract when the Teen Titans and the Titans came together for the first time in the Rebirth era. And, you know, Garth reached out later on in that crossover and said, you know, if you need to be in touch with me, please do. You know, he's asking questions of Jackson. He's wondering where he is. And Jackson is saying that, you know, I don't really know. I don't really know who I am. That's one of the reasons that I'm here. So Tempest is extending a hand, and he is going to be to play a role in Blood of the Manta and play a role beyond this. So I see them as aligned. And right now, you know, if you're following Aquaman, you know that things are spiraling out of control there. So Aquaman will remain sort of sidelined, you know, sort of an offstage character, which will just sort of build up the anticipation of his eventual introduction to Jackson.
Nice. Now, my final question comes from another one of my patrons. Hunter Romans asks, what is the future of Aqualad going to be? And you can feel to be as vague or as specific as you like.
This story, this Rise of Aqualad and Blood of the Manta story are, as you said, the equivalent of a kind of year one approach. From here on out, you know, we're going to just explore this character further emotionally, but also come to understand better his powers and how he might be play a critical role in the struggle over the oceans, in that he has this magical origin that comes out of Zebel. And, you know, I can't say too much for risk of severe spoilers, but, you know, when it comes to the battle over what lies beneath, he's a key component.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. Can you please tell our listeners where they can find you online and some of the books they want to pick up if they would like to check out some of your work?
Yeah. I mean, you can find me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, cracking bad jokes and posting pictures of my puppy Chewbacca. But you can otherwise, you know, check out maybe some of my novels. The latest one is The Darknet, and it drops this August. So I'll see you online or see you in the stacks.
Also, and also to our listeners as well, Blood of the Manta Part 2 comes out the same week as this podcast, so you'd make sure you want to check out that. Teen Titans is an awesome book. It's one of my favorites, DC Rebirth, so you definitely want to check it out. Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And that was an amazing conversation. Thank you so much to Benjamin Percy for stopping by the podcast and talking to us about the Teen Titans. If you want more Teen Titans or just general awesome comic book top, you're going to want to go over to Geek History Lesson Extra, which is all about the writing process with Benjamin Percy. We're going to talk to him more. We're going to ask him more questions about his career, his life, writing process. You can listen to that over at patreon.com/Jawman. All right, now it's time to move into the teaching tweet,
where in 140 characters or less, the amazing Professor Jason is going to sum up everything that he just taught us about Aqualad.
Aqualad. He came from TV. Now he swims the comic seas. Will he ever get a harpoon hand like 90s Aquaman? That's it.
Nice.
I mean, he's a baby character. He gets a baby teaching tweet.
Yeah, that's okay.
All right. And now let's move into the final section of our podcast, The Honor Roll, where if you go over to iTunes and you leave us a 5-star review, we're going to give you a shout out in the podcast. And you get to become part of the Honor Roll of the Mind University. This one comes from Gurasol Flamente.
Thank you.
Says, one of my favorite podcasts. I can't wait for each new episode to come out. Ashley lends a female perspective much missed in other podcasts for us lady listeners.
Heck
and
yeah.
Jason's flair makes the information entertaining, and even his singing has started to grow on me.
I love your singing.
So there
Clearly
you go.
She has great taste.
She has great taste, and thank you so much, and welcome to the Honor Roll. And if you want to be like her, all you got to do is go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating and a review, and we will shout you out on the podcast. And also, you're going to help out the podcast by doing that. But while you're there, don't forget to download Geek History Lesson. You can download it also on Spotify, and you can listen to it on Stitcher. Mm-hmm. And Ashley, if they want to suggest future Teen Titans, like the Goliath episode or the Garth Tempest episode, where
yes.
can they do that?
Yes, please go and request both of those over at geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, and on Twitter at GHL Podcast. There's a bunch of different ways to contact us in all of those places.
That's right. And you can find us on Twitter. For me, it's at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. For Ashley, it's at Ashley V. Robinson. Mm. And for the podcast, it's at GHL Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. I am Jason Waterblades Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Aqua Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Well, I'm going to dismiss this class because I now live in Tucumcari, New Mexico, because the peoples with the cables and the aqua boys and the aqua girls have just drove me away. You know, I'm telling them constantly to get off my lawn, but I, you know, wait a minute. Hold on. They manipulate the waters. I should have them water. Oh, damn it. I'm going back to Silver City, New Mexico. These water boys and water girls got a lot of water my lawn. Oh, common sense, people. Common sense. Exceptions. Ha 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 ha